Okay, let me just officially welcome everyone to today's Conversations with the Masters call with David Allen. My name is Mary Allen, no relation, as far as we know so far. I'm a Master Certified Coach, author of The Power of Inner Choice, and of course your host for this Conversations with the Masters series. And before I introduce David, I just want to welcome our live listeners today, and those of you who may be listening to this as a recording, want to just thank you again for continuing to spread the word about these Conversations with the Masters calls. And just to note that today's call will be recorded, so you can go back and listen again or refer a friend to listen. If you've pre-registered for the call, you'll be receiving a special follow-up email later this week. And right now I just want to invite everybody to clear all distractions and really allow yourself to be 100% focused on today's call. And you'll probably want to take lots of notes. So have a pen and paper handy. And David, I've got you here on the line, yes?
I'm here.
Oh, fantastic. Well, let me just give you a proper introduction for those that don't know. David Allen is an international best-selling author. He's a lecturer, founder, and chairman of the David Allen Company, which is a management consulting, coaching, and training company. In the last 20 years, he's developed and implemented productivity improvement programs, get this, for over 1 million professionals in literally hundreds of organizations worldwide, many of those, of course, being Fortune 500 corporations. He's the author of 3 books, the international best-selling book, Getting Things Done, subtitled The Art of Stress-Free Productivity, Ready for Anything, second book, 52 Productivity Principles for Getting Things Done, and his most recent book, which was just released last December of 2008, Making It All Work, Winning at the Game of Work and Business of Life. And the business of life. He's a popular keynote speaker on the topics of time and stress management, individual and team productivity, and high performance work practices. So, welcome, David. I'm really, really glad to have you here today.
Happy to be here. Thank
you. So, maybe the first question is how did you get started in all this productivity and personal effectiveness?
There's a long, long story. The short version of it is that I've always had a lot of interest in models that work. It's basic principles. If I understand a principle and go apply it, then better things happen. I say
conference gain is on.
I wake up in the morning thinking, how much easier can I make whatever it is that I'm doing? So I discovered one day they call that process improvement. They pay people for that. I thought that was pretty funny. Basically, I've always been into, the efficiency game. And at the same time, more and more subtle levels about where, what it is that we do that affects our ability to be able to achieve results and to, get there without any more pressure. So I discovered the strategic value of clear space a long time ago in working particularly in the martial arts, in the meditative kind of practices there that have a very practical implication. As you coached everybody to begin with, good idea to get all the distractions off your mind. It's just that, I discovered early on that there were a lot of distractions that you can't just get rid of simply by wishing them to go away. They're actually, best practices that you have to do, and that's really what I uncovered. As a management consultant, I started working with a lot of people who own businesses and entrepreneurs and executives and found out that they had a lot of distractions. And so, there was not really very much good information about how to get rid of them.
Well, I love that you've sort of taken it upon yourself to define these systems and create methodologies that can be really duplicatable. So I'm curious, when you go into the office of an executive or let's say even somebody on this call that hires you, where do you begin with them to start addressing the confusion and anxiety and the overwhelmness that so many people have?
Well, the first thing I do is share with people what the basic model is. that you know, if you're keeping something in your head, it's in the wrong place, and that basically you need to capture all the stuff that you have attention on, make good executive decisions about what those things mean, park the results of that in some sort of coherent, you know, organizational system so that you can then back off and review all of that at any point in time and essentially always have an objective snapshot of what your agreements are. So once people understand that, that's actually the process that we start with is just that. We say, okay, well, what around your office is not supplies, reference material, decoration, or equipment? Because anything that's not those four things represents something that's incomplete, something that's in process, something that some part of you has some level of commitment to get finished. And so we just gather all that stuff together, usually gather it back together and put it in the in basket. And then we say, okay, what else might be on your mind that may not be in this stack yet? Oh, I got to get tires in my car. Oh, that's right, my mom's. And we just start capturing all of that stuff, little, big, personal, professional, doesn't matter. And we just get all that sort of raw triggers or raw data out to begin with. That's the first step.
And that's really, and for somebody that's just starting with that process, how long does that part take? And why aren't most people doing that? Because I imagine there's a lot of people, too, that have even read your book, but then haven't actually taken the time to even do this very first step.
Well, I think there are a lot of reasons people resist it. First of all, you know, you'll be amazed by how much you've actually committed to, and that's kind of ghastly for a lot of people in college.
Yes.
Oh, my God, look at all. It's huge. A lot of people just don't. That's why it's in their head. They're trying to keep control of it without looking at it. And it's a false sense of security to try to hang on to it in your head. So, you know, most people, it's kind of like instantly feel awful and instantly feel better once they start to offload that stuff out of their psyche. But, you know, if a typical mid to senior level professional that we coach can take anywhere from 1 to 6 hours just to gather together all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to intimidate people because, truly, if you just sat down, everybody listening to this at some point has felt their back up against the wall and felt, you know, a little bit confused and sat down and made a list and you felt at least a little bit better. But if you'd actually reverse engineered or figured out why that happened, why by making a list did you feel better, nothing on the list moved forward. Nothing made, you know, there's been no progress in the world out there, but you feel more in control and more focused when you do that. I just figured out why that worked. And if you, once you figure that out, you'd never want to keep anything in your head.
Right.
So that's stage one. Now, a lot of people write stuff down, but then they don't go any further than that, and so it all crawls back up psychologically into their head because they don't deal with what they wrote down.
So what's the second key piece? So if the first one...
The second key piece is once you get it all out of your head, and the whole point of this is to put it, for instance, in an in basket or to put it, you could literally call your own answer machine and leave yourself messages with all of that stuff. Basically, what you want to do, what you don't want to do is just write it down and throw it around again. What you do want to do is write it down and into some sort of capture bucket that you then trust you will see sooner than later. The answer machine is good because it gives you a red blinking light.
Yeah.
You want to get rid of that blinking light. It'd be good if your in basket did the same thing, but unfortunately it doesn't. So you have to train yourself to have, hey, there are emails in my email. There is stuff in my in basket. I now need to sit down and get it to zero. But getting it to zero doesn't mean finishing what's in there. It does mean to go through stage two of getting control, which is just clarifying what exactly those things mean to you. What are the commitments that you've made? What's the project, if anything, that you're committed to do about mom and her birthday? And what's the next action step you need to take? And so outcome and action are the two core sort of questions and answers that you need to come up with. And I think a lot of people just resist that process. This whole process forces people to have to think and make decisions, and a lot of people are not comfortable doing that.
Right. I don't know if it's better to put it off because obviously that's what's creating the overwhelm and the stress and so forth is by having things in your head and having all these things undecided.
Well, it's tricky business. It's okay to decide not to decide as long as you have it in the decide not to decide system.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is if most people are trying to hang on to all this stuff in their psyche, and the psyche seems to have no sense of past or future. So you put all this stuff in there, and there's some part of you that keeps thinking you should be doing, deciding all of it, but you never do any of it. And so it'll wake you up at 3 o'clock in the morning and beat you bloody about stuff you can't do anything about while you're lying there, but it's because you gave it to the monkey in your head, and it can't let go. It just doesn't have a real conscious, you know, it'll surface the weirdest, dumbest little things at the strangest, awkward moments. So it doesn't really have a lot of innate intelligence. It's more like, you know, the some sort of a dumb terminal that's just feeding stuff back to you in strange order. So the whole idea is just to understand the mechanics of it, that your head is not the place to hold that. But it's okay to absolutely write stuff down and say, you know, I'm not going to decide about that for 2 weeks. You just need to park it somewhere so that some part of you trust in 2 weeks it'll come back to you to then rethink it again, like a tickler file, or put it on a calendar, or hand it to your assistant and say, hey, show this to me in 2 weeks. Whatever it is, as long as you've made the decision that will wait and have it in a systematic process. That's why stage three is so important, is once you've made these decisions, you then need to park these things, you know, based upon, and park reminders of these things based upon what they mean to you. If you decide that email is just reference, there's no action you need to take, you need to park it where reference emails go, not just leaving it in your in basket. If you've decided you need to make a call about your mom's birthday to your sister, and you don't want to do it right now, you need to park that somewhere that you trust you'll see when you have a phone and time. So it's not rocket science, unless you're building rockets.
Mm-hmm.
It is something that, and everybody does it to some degree. See, I didn't make this up. I just looked around when people are in control and are appropriately focused, what are the behaviors they're engaged in, and I just started to identify what those are. So basically, it's nothing new. Everybody knows how to write stuff down, and everybody knows how to make a decision about what you're going to do about mom, you know, what you're committed to and what action you need to take, and everybody knows how to make a list and to look at it at the right time. So, again, this is not like some new technology or some foreign language. That's kind of why it's so tricky. It's so, in a way, it's so simple. A lot of people miss the power of this.
Right, but I think where your system is really beautiful is that it takes into account where all the potential leaks and problems potentially are, because it's not the stuff that's on your list that can create the stress. It's what's not on your list that's still in your head, or it's not having that good system for follow-up and follow-through and at every juncture.
Yeah, and it's strange about this because, you know, it's almost very few people really do it completely, and it'll totally change the game when you totally capture everything and trust that it's in some intact system. If you only half do it, if you only half make lists and you still have half in your head, you don't trust either one, and they both feel bad. So, you know, either keep it all in your head. Don't bother trying to organize anything, and just trust that whatever will show up will show up. I like the sort of, you know, spiritual hypothesis that if I just walk up, God will give me all the answers. But, you know, so far, you know, I haven't been able to listen good enough to have him give me all the phone numbers when I need them.
You know, right.
You know, so I meanwhile, you know, until I have another source that can let me know exactly what I need to do when I need to do it, I better manage myself.
Right. Well, and what I loved also is that even though this is a very structured system, it's like once we have all the systems in place, you really actually do encourage people listening to their intuition to guide their choices throughout the day. Can you talk a little bit about incorporating the intuition?
Well, you're going to have to. There's no system in the world that if you run the formula, you know, I don't care if you're an artificial intelligence expert or you're a macro freak in Excel, you're not going to run a program that when you run it, it says call Fred. I mean, you might, but you're going to go, no, I'd rather call Sue, or no, I need to take a nap.
Yeah.
So ultimately, every decision you make is going to be an intuitive one anyway. You could never get enough information that you could absolutely trust that given all the variables of the universe, this is exactly the thing you need to do. So it's always an intuitive judgment. What you want to do is move from hope to trust in those intuitive judgments. Hope of most people are sort of just kind of, well, I hope this is what I need to do because it's in front of me and it seems to be the latest and loudest thing, but there's a part of you that doesn't really trust that. And what you want to do is to be able to look at the whole thing and go, you know, given all the stuff and all the horizons I'm looking at and all the commitments at all these different levels, here's what I want to do. And it might be the wrong call, but live and learn. You know, at least you're off your own back and you're fully engaged with what you're doing, which is your highest learning state, is just to be fully engaged. So that's what you want to do, is just be, I need to get off my own back. I need to make sure that my systems are set up so that I'm looking at enough so that when I say, hey, being on this phone call with Mary Ellen today is exactly what I need to do. So, but it, as I say, you can only feel good about what you're not doing when you know what you're not doing. And very few people are sitting there with a real clear inventory of everything they're not doing while they're listening to this call.
Right. Well, and that is one of the I guess one of the big challenges is, how we get to be at peace with what we're not doing.
It's funny, half empty, half full. You either feel good about the one thing you're doing, or you feel really bad about all the stuff you're not doing, because you can only do one thing at a time, believe it or not, or at least consciously.
Right, with our full attention.
So everything essentially is kind of a someday maybe, except whatever the thing is that you're doing in the moment. You just want to be fully available to what you're doing in the moment.
Right, and I'm with you that if we can just focus on that feeling good, on the exactly what we're doing right now, and no, we can't be doing anything about the other things now, that there is a way of, it's that real present moment living that can make such a difference in creating more optimal flow.
Sure. And, this gets very subtle because, a lot of people have what you would call problems, and the problem is really just a project that's still not been, appropriately defined yet. Look, I have a problem with my son's math teacher, or, he's got a problem with his math teacher, or I've got a problem that he's got a problem. Great. Well, what's the project? Project? Yeah. What are you trying to accomplish here? What's your outcome? And, getting people to think about their situations in life as actual projects. And the project may simply be, look, to find out whether there's anything you can do about it or not. And most people usually feel bad about, things out there because they assume that they should be different. They're just not involved in making them different. So a lot of what this, as simple as these little principles of get it out of your head, make a decision about what you're committed to finish about that, as simple as that sounds, you can actually start to create some pretty profound, results in your life in terms of getting back in the driver's seat with some of these more subtle things that a lot of people, have pulling on them.
Mm-hmm. Well, so if we look at, so there's really five stages of managing workflow. So we've talked about...
They're five steps. They really sit very close together, but they're very different kinds of behaviors with different tools. And it's not one thing. It's actually in my new book, Making It All Work. I really discovered that the whole idea of self-management really comes down to control and perspective, and the managing the flow of work, and work being very broadly defined, like anything you want to do that's not done yet, and anything that's coming at you in terms of input during the day, phone calls, interruptions, emails, mail, things like that. All that stuff and managing that does take to get in control of that, so you don't feel like you're being just run over by the world. Does include five stages to it. So you got to collect is the first one. You got to then clarify or process what you've collected, stage two. Stage three is to organize the results of that in some coherent way. Stage four is step back and review and reflect on the contents, both keeping them current as well as maintaining perspective across the spectrum. And then stage five is then, okay, now what do I do? How do I allocate my focus and my resources? What action do I take right now based upon the stage one through four. And that's essentially how you get control. It's how you get control of cooking dinner. It's how you get control of a country. It's how you get control of anything. But those are all very different. Most people think, well, I just need to go get organized, and that's just phase three. And if all you try to do is sit down and just try to get organized, usually what you're doing is just rearranging incomplete piles of still unclear stuff. Most people, that's why most people's organization systems don't really work, and they're always looking for, well, what's a better tool? What's a better tool? What's a better tool? Because the tool itself isn't doing anything. The tools, all you really need are lists, for the most part, in terms of keeping all this under control. You just need to know what needs to be on the list. So you've got to, first of all, capture everything out of your head and then make decisions about projects and action items tied to them. About all of those. And that's those first two things, I think, are what I uncovered with my methodology, that you have to do those first before any organization system is going to function well.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I certainly agree in that there's so much we're not capturing and taking the time to clarify as far as, what really is that next step as it relates to this particular project.
Exactly. And even if a lot of people don't want to sit and think about it until they have all the answers. That's where the perfectionism comes in and procrastination comes in. I don't want to move on until I'm sure that I have everything I need to move on it appropriately and successfully. Well, come on. You're not gonna know how to do it until you start doing something, and then that generates the next piece of data and then the next piece of data. So there is a master key to just getting going and getting involved and then course correcting as you do that. But a lot of people just, you know, kind of stop the process. And if you pardon the phrase, they sort of constipate their thinking in their head as opposed to, wait a minute, let me get it out. Let me decide what movement would look like on this thing moving toward whatever the outcome is I want to achieve.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then you talked also, so in your latest book, Making It All Work, talking about perspective, and so can you say more about?
Sure. You know, the first book really focused a lot on the tactical, you know, practical applications that I've been talking about here. How do I get control of my email? How do I get a good system that doesn't overstructure me, but that actually can hold the whole thing and that's easily seen? But a lot of people said, gee, David, you didn't really focus on priorities. Well, priorities is a much more subtle and perhaps complex issue than just, you know, A, B, C, 1, 2, 3. You need to be thinking priorities all the time. But I couldn't get it any simpler than the six horizons I discovered we all tend to have, you know, commitments at. And all those six horizons, and I use the altitude scale, like 50,000 feet, 40,000, 30,000, so forth, each one of those different horizons, we all sort of explicitly or at least implicitly have commitments at all, and they're very different. And if you really want to know that the one thing you're doing is what you should be doing, you know, strategically, tactically, importance, priority-wise, you know, you really need to make sure that you've run yourself through appropriately the conversations at all those different levels and lined them up. So, for instance, if you say, well, gee, should I be listening to this call with Mary and David? Well, you know, 50,000 feet would be, well, what's your life purpose? And is this supporting that? You know, so purpose and your ultimate intentionality is the sort of the top driver in terms of your priorities. If you're off purpose, you know, in terms of what you're about, whether that's a company or just a person, then obviously that's not something you should be doing. You need to be doing things that are on purpose. But knowing your life purpose, how much is that going to let you know which phone call you need to make right now? Well, you're probably going to need to get a little more operational. So come down to 40,000, which is the vision of what your purpose would look like out here in the world fulfilled. Generally speaking, that'd be like, what are your long-term goals or vision, lifestyle or career-wise, or, you know, 3, 4, 5 years from now? If things were wildly successful, what would you be doing? What would it look like? And if you got that clear, that'll make it maybe a little bit easier to decide which email to respond to or phone call to make. But you probably then need to drop it down to 30,000 feet, which is shorter-term goals. Well, I have this big vision. I want to be a, you know, world-renowned author, or I want to run, I want to run in the Olympics or whatever. Well, great. If you can't quite run around the block, you probably better set a goal for the next year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what are the shorter-term things that I need to accomplish that I think will best move me toward that vision? So that's, you know, 1-2 year kind of goals and objectives. Those would be typical at that 30,000 level. And now if you have all that, I know my purpose, I have the vision, and I have some short-term goals, that might make it a little bit easier to decide exactly what to do this afternoon, but you're still going to need to go down to 20,000 feet, which are all the areas of responsibility that you need to maintain. You need to eat lunch. You need to make sure that your family's happy. You need to make sure your household is okay and the sprinklers work. And, you know, there's all that kind of maintenance stuff, both at your job description, what are the things you need to maintain, like staff development and asset management and growing sales and, you know, all that stuff. That's what I need to keep doing and keep maintaining, as well as in my life. I need to make sure my checking account is balanced and, in other words, all the areas of my life that I need to maintain. Finance, health, spiritual life, relationships, household, family, et cetera. So if you think about all that, now that comes down to 20,000 feet. You got your purpose, you got your vision, you got some short-term goals, and you're also looking across all the things you need to maintain to be able to get you there. You're going to come up with a whole lot of things you need to finish, projects down to 10,000 feet, and most people have between 30 and 100. Get tires on my car, handle my kids getting into school and onto cruise control about that. You know, handling mom's birthday, reassessing, you know, our car insurance, you know, stuff like that. All those kind of things that take more than one step. And again, most people have 40, 50, 60 of those at the 10,000-foot level. Now, if you knew what all of that is, all the way down to all the projects you have about all those different horizons, you still don't have anything to do yet. Now you come down to the runway, I call it, you know, right here down on the ground where the rubber hits the road, and those are the physical actions, the things you need to do at the phone, at the hardware store, at the grocery store, at your boss, at your family, you know, at your house, at your office, all the physical things you need to do. So physical actions down at that horizon, most people have over 150 of those, just current. If you really look at the inventory, I got to go to this meeting, and I need to talk to my boss about these three things, and I need to buy these six things from the hardware store. If you add all that up, that's a lot of stuff.
Right.
Now, if you have all of that clear, everything I just said, then it's still challenging enough to decide, am I still doing the right thing? But again, it'll be more from a trusted place as opposed to, gee, I hope that what I'm doing is what I ought to be doing, given all those other things I am not particularly conscious about.
Right. Wow. So I, as I'm hearing you talk, I'm thinking all of our listeners are going, yep, that's my life. I've got at least 150 actions, and they probably didn't even realize they have probably 30 to 100 projects. Maybe they did.
Most people don't. Most people, and by the way, I'm not saying you should.
Yeah.
You know, people get mad at me for their list. I'm going, excuse me, it's not my list.
Right.
All I'm doing is getting you to become conscious about where you have put your energy and where you've put your attachments and where you've made your commitments.
Yeah.
And if you, a lot of people, by the way, one of the great values of implementing my stuff is that word NO comes easier. Because most people just keep saying yes because they have no idea how much they've got. So they say, well, maybe I could do it. So sure. So, you know, it makes it so easy to try to keep the approval coming by telling everybody you're going to do everything they ask you to do. But as soon as you start to see how much stuff you've really committed to, you'll realize that if I tell them I'm going to, there's no way on God's green earth I'm going to finish that. So now I'm going to make an agreement and break it. That's even worse. So you become a lot more, you know, pardon me, adult.
Mm-hmm.
See what you've actually committed to. You'll make better decisions. Still not easy. And I'm not saying this, you know, suddenly makes life simple. But what it does is it gives you a good ground to then start to make better trusted decisions about, you know, what you commit to and what you don't.
So one rule of thumb is about saying no to, you know, once we evaluate these, you know, whether it's 30 to 100 projects and all these actions, certainly one of the things we want to do is potentially cut off some of this stuff or put it at least in the, you know, the do later,
sure.
Kind of the someday maybe.
Yeah, well, I'd say, first of all, you need to make sure you're as efficient as you are. In other words, you need to be as productive as you can be. Otherwise, you're just going to get rid of stuff that you don't need to because you, frankly, could have gotten it done a whole lot easier.
Okay, well, that's a really good point.
Most people, see, if you haven't figured out the very next action on something, then you're, by its very nature, you're procrastinating about it. You haven't decided what to do about Mom's birthday yet. And you say, oh, I've got this project, Mom's birthday. Yeah, well, what's the next step? If you actually sat down and thought about it, you know, surf the web for 5 minutes or call my sister for 2 minutes. You know, they're not hard. So first of all, I would make sure that you test or challenge your own efficiency factor in terms of your ability to get things done first, because otherwise you might be cutting stuff off that you don't need to. You know, most executives that I work with, quite frankly, once I sit down with them and they go through all these major, major projects, they wind up delegating and, you know, a whole lot of things out there. They just need to keep track of what they're waiting on. But, you know, it doesn't take them long to make a decision. It doesn't take them long to send an email to, you know, to have somebody else start moving on it.
Mm-hmm.
But they're the bottleneck until they make those decisions. The point of that is that you can actually start moving. You can very easily maintain 60, 70 projects all moving along without, you know, stressing yourself out. So, yes, first handle the efficiency factor, and then at that point, you say, yeah, no, I'm pretty as efficient as I could be, but it looks like I just got a lot more to do than I can do, and these new things that just showed up are going to take a lot more priority, so let me take these other six things and put them on the back burner for now. That's smart. That's mature.
Okay.
It's difficult to do that if you don't feel like I've got control of what the whole inventory is.
See, I was thinking I could take the easy way out and just clear off some of these things.
Now, you can. As somebody said, there's this thing out there called email bankruptcy. You say, oh, I got 6,000. Let me just hit the Control-A, delete.
Right.
And pray, you know, and they just hope that nothing too bad blows up on you. But that's kind of a crapshoot. There are easier ways to deal with that with less stress.
Right. Well, I love that. First of all, just challenging our efficiency factor. And this very, very powerful question, what's the next step? Anything you're procrastinating on, just one simple question. And really, if we just even give it, you know, 30 seconds to a minute, I mean, it's not that hard to come up with what the next step could be, even if that is getting help to brainstorm, getting some other information or some input from somebody to help create that clarity.
Yeah, that's it. And oftentimes, as I said before, people are trying to be perfect, and so they don't get involved. They just feel bad about it because, you know, we all like to feel successful. I mean, nobody wakes up in the morning and say, "Wow, I'm just going to go be an incompetent jerk today." You know, that, we all really want to do a good job, and we really want it to look good, you know, to ourselves and to other people. So the truth is, we will tend to avoid jumping into stuff that we don't feel like we can, you know, handle successfully or that we know the answers to. But the truth is, wait a minute, I don't know how to solve this problem with my son and his math teacher, but let me get a next step toward it. So oftentimes defining an action step about the process, what do I need to do next to find out what I need to do next? Oh, as long as you get clear about that, you're on. Believe it or not, you don't have to have all the answers. You just need to know what the next thing is that's going to move you toward getting them.
I think that's very, very key.
It's a big key, big one.
Well, and you mentioned email, and I'm sure there's people saying, huh, can he help with the email too? How do you manage the overflowing inboxes? And
well, don't let them overflow. You know, I imagine most everybody listening to this has a comfort zone of your light not blinking on your answering machine. Right?
Yes.
I mean, how do you feel, Mary, if you have an answer machine that has a light on it and it's sitting there blinking at you? What do you tend to want to do?
Well, fortunately, I'm really grateful. I don't have one of those. I have the voicemail kind, so I just get the dot, 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 dot. And
right.
I'm kind of bad about checking my voicemail. It's either an appointment
right.
that somebody's calling me, or I actually am really bad about answering my phone.
Well, the truth is like the at some point, you're either going to answer or you're not.
Right.
So it's a whole lot easier to keep it clean on the front end. If you're not doing that, you're constantly rethinking what's in there.
Yeah.
Every time you're opening it.
Yep, that's so definitely true. Or you're in denial like I am, and
it's just psychologically inefficient.
Right.
You know, look, if you're going to fret about it, just fret about it once. You know, as opposed to keeping on fretting about how you shouldn't be fretting about what you're fretting about.
Yeah. So if we come, let's say, back to emails, what may be some great ways to get started with?
Yeah, well, basically you need to process your emails because they've already collected the stuff for you. So phase one has already sort of happened there. You've got them. You know, now you've collected them into your in-basket. Then if you wanted to get that in-basket empty, you don't have to finish what the email is, but you need to put it through the process. And my books, GTD system, which is the sort of getting started package, if you will, of how to get going with GTD, walks you through the specifics of this. But it's pretty simple. You just ask yourself, look, is this an actionable email or not? Is it something that I need to take some action about or not? And if not, then you either delete it because I don't need it, or I just file it because, you know, then I create a folder in my navigator folder, you know, in my email, and just move it over into that folder so I can get to it in case I need it later on and search. You know, I can search for it in case I want it. So basically, non-actionable things, either delete or, you know, file them as reference. And then the ones you have to take action on, then you need to ask those two questions. What project, if you have any projects there, that's embedded, and where are you going to keep track of that? And put that on a list called projects. And then the email itself, well, what's the next action? And if you need to take an action on that, by the way, if you can take any action in 2 minutes, you should do it right then. It'll take you longer to stack it and track it and look at it than to finish it the first time it's in your face. So 2-minute rule will help a ton with email, because a lot of those emails that you can whip out in 2 minutes, assuming that you can type reasonably well, you know, a lot of those you can just eliminate right there just simply by responding to it and closing the loop. But anything that takes longer than 2 minutes, then you should ask yourself, look, should I be doing this? And you want to delegate anything that you can to other people. And many times you can't because you don't have anybody to delegate to. But if you did, then you'd want to forward it on and say, hey, could you handle this, et cetera. Or if it's now going to take longer than 2 minutes and you have to do whatever the action is in the email, one of the quick ways that you can organize your email is simply to create a folder called action. You know that, and then just put that email that is an actionable item, put it into that folder called action. It's a good idea to usually start with some prefix like the @, because that'll make it look different than your reference folders over in your navigator. But if you had an action folder, you could just drag that over in there. Now, here's the problem. You know, by the way, if you deleted everything, filed everything, handled the 2-minute stuff, delegated whatever you could, and moved all the other actionable things that you've got into your action folder, and you've got nothing left in your email, here's the biggest problem. Most people have never seen zero in email. They get so excited, they just go party hardy and never open the action folder.
Mm.
That won't work either. The problem with the computer is out of sight, out of mind, and that's why, you know, people sort of, I think, subliminally still keep all their stuff in their in basket because they think, well, that's the safest place because I'll at least see it. But as soon as you get more than a screen full in your in basket, you're really in trouble because you can't see it all and you have to keep rethinking it all the time.
Right.
So all this, that's, by the way, that's how you empty your in basket. That's how you process your mail. So again, it's the universal processing process that you need to apply. Just email is a bear because there's so much out there and you've got to get really good and really fast with it because to keep up with the volume.
Right. Right. So that's really good. So just actionable or not, we either delete it or file it. What project does it belong to? And on the project one, would you have a file for each one of your projects or just?
You could. If you were keeping an email relative to the project, yeah, that's you can organize things by project or people or topic. It really doesn't matter. I think I probably have 250 folders down my navigator bar.
Yeah, I think I've got about that many.
Yeah, but that doesn't matter. It's just reference material, just a library. So you just go find it when you need it. The real key is, for instance, if it is a project, you need a project list. That's one of the key elements of anything. And you're probably not going to keep that within your email. You need to create a list somewhere, wherever you're going to keep lists, and keep track of those 30, 40, 50 projects you've got. Because that's the thing that you need to come back around, and at least once a week, you better be looking at all the projects you've got, little and big and personal and professional, what we call the weekly review. That's a critical element to sort of tie all this together.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then just to reiterate that a project is anything that requires more than one action. So,
right. And anything you can finish within a few weeks or months, too.
Okay.
If you've got some big project like that's going to take you 3 years, I'd call that a goal. Not so much a project. Projects, and the reason, if you can finish it within a few weeks or months, there's a part of your psyche that really needs to be looking at it at least once a week to make sure you're okay with what you're doing and what you're not doing about it.
So okay.
That's why, the definition of project has a very real reason for it. Look, if I can finish it within a year, I better look at it once a week, and that weekly review is really driven off that project list. What's next about kids in school and getting them onto cruise control? I bet a number of people listening to this right now have that right on their plate right now. In terms of the school year, do they have all the logistics? Is all that set up? Are all the classes okay? Do they have all the supplies they need? Do they have all the clothes they need? Yada, yada, yada. And, from the very first moment that was on a parent's mind, that should have been on a project list. And at least once a week, asking yourself, okay, what's next? What's next? What's the next action? What do I need to do to put that to bed?
Right.
And, essentially what you're doing here is putting stakes in the ground for these commitments that you've got at these different horizons and then just making sure you build in a review process to take a look at them as often as you need to.
Well, and do you ever find that some people feel like, well, gosh, something like planning for, your kids going back to school, it's like, wow, writing down, isn't it a little anal to write down all the steps for, preparing to get my child back?
I'd say only that comes down to people's personality and how often you've ever sent kids to school. If you've never done it before, you probably better do that to get it off your mind because you don't know what you don't need to know yet.
Right.
If you've got 16 kids and you've been doing this for 12 years, you probably don't need to write a whole lot, but you better decide what's next and where that happens.
Right, and probably that person has come up with the system of exactly what needs to get done, what's not as important, and boom, 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 we do this all in this order, if they're peaceful.
But at some point, no matter how much project planning you do, a project plan hardly gets down to a next action. I just say, okay, well, wait, what's the next step on the kids? Oh, that reminds me, I need to call XYZ.
Yeah.
And by the way, if all you have to do, see, a lot of parents, especially stay-at-home parents with very young children, say, oh, I don't need to get organized because the kids just tell me what to do. They drop the milk, I clean it up. They cry, I feed them. And it's almost like, well, I'm letting myself essentially be run by them, and they will be served. So there is a sense that they do that. But as soon as you start to have to keep track of something you can't finish in the moment, that's when you start to need a systematic way to keep track of it because you're going to get interrupted. Obviously, the kids are going to, and their life is going to interrupt you like crazy all the time. So in order for that interruption to be felt as, oh, here's just a new opportunity, you know, a new creative spin, as opposed to, oh, my God, this is overwhelming. I keep getting interrupted, and I can't get anything done. So those are two very different syndromes. I mean, it's kind of like one of them is done with, yes, I've got all the stuff under control, therefore I have the freedom to deal with things spontaneously, as opposed to I'm just going to deal with things spontaneously because I don't have a system.
Right, right. Well, and I just would love to encourage anyone that if there is anything that is bringing any amount of stress, likely it's a project, and you can find just a lot of peace right then and there and just sitting down and writing down all of the elements for that are involved in that particular project. Get it out of your head and to where you can then go on to getting them organized and clarified and ultimately executing a little more peacefully.
Sure. I think everybody could probably use more training in just offloading stuff out of their head.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's up on a whiteboard or just sitting down on a piece of notepaper or, you know, if you like to type, you know, go pull up a word processing document and just start writing, you know, or just outlining or bullet points. You know, sure, any of that. I think any time you externalize things, you're probably going to feel better and have a healthier and more objective perspective on the whole thing.
Well, I love that you've given me full permission to do lists because innately that's what I've been doing. Anytime I start to get to that overwhelmed feeling, I'm always grabbing my notebook and writing a new list and reorganizing and resetting goals and so forth. I will now be integrating a few more steps so that maybe I don't have to cycle in that manner in quite the same way.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you're already there. I mean, that's why I say, I mean, you obviously have demonstrated, look, I know these things work, these principles work. I just found out what the principle was, and I said, okay, once you understand the principle, if you're really going to apply it, then you would want to do all of this methodology.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't want to have to do that. You would really want to say, wow, I feel much more relaxed and in control when I've captured, clarified, organized, and reviewed all of my stuff, and when I'm looking at all these horizons appropriately in some appropriate interval. So, again, it's not rocket science, but, again, training ourselves to make that second nature as opposed to some big should out there that we should do and we avoid, that's, of course, the big challenge.
Right. Well, and there's, you know, some of these other pieces that weren't obvious to me, you know, tracking what I'm waiting on. You know, anything I would send to my assistant, you know, there's, I rarely write that down, and so in the back of my head, it's like, I'm waiting on that, and how long ago has that been, and do I need to follow up, or am I going to be bugging them to follow up? But that, what a useful list that is what are you waiting on?
Yep. No, that's a big one.
That's huge.
Yeah, and, you know, I think of a lot of people who manage other people particularly. Even if you don't manage other people, you're often waiting on things from your boss. You're waiting on things from the bank. You're waiting on things from the insurance company. You're waiting on, you know, things from your kids. You're waiting on all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
And a good keeping track of that. Because oftentimes when you say, well, what's the next action? And you say, well, I can't do anything because I'm waiting on the form to come from the you know, motor vehicle department. Or I'm waiting, right, but you better track that. You better know when you sent it to them or when they said that you'd get it by. And be looking at that enough so to get that off your mind. So you can't, you know, people say, well, gee, how do I control all those other people who are out of control out there? I'm saying, well, you can't. Come on.
Yeah.
You know, but it's kind of the more out of control they are, the more you'd better be in control so you know what's yours and what's theirs, and you can draw a nice, clean, you know, corral around yours so their mess doesn't bother you.
Right. Well, and then ultimately you'll know when you get to a certain juncture of, do I need to find a different resource to get that done, or... Yeah, you can reevaluate as opposed to just
sure.
being victim to the waiting on stuff.
Well, come on. In general, most people, until or unless they start to work this methodology, just make decisions when things blow up instead of when they show up.
Yeah.
That's really all this is. There's no new behavior, except the new behavior is make the action decision and make the, you know, make conscious what it is that you need to keep track of about things when things first are on your plate, not when the heat forces you to. Most organizations, most people I work with, the vast majority of their decisions are made when the heat on the situation forces them to, as opposed to, wait a minute, it's on my mind. What do I need to do to get this off my mind?
Mm-hmm.
So back to our original, you know, the way we started this, the way I got into this was the strategic value of clear space. But clear space psychologically in your head, I'm not a psychologist. I'm just a practicing human being. But, you know, basically everybody knows what it feels like to sort of have that fresh breeze blow through your head called, wow, I got it all off my mind, and it's all on cruise control. And that's, you know, that can be, as opposed to the exception, that can be more the rule in terms of how you start living. And then it actually becomes a lot easier to be spontaneous and follow your intuitive hunches, which is my style anyway.
Right, right. Well, I love coming back to emphasize on that piece. Well, so, okay, let's say we've done a great job at capturing, because you've inspired us well and given us lots of tools in your book, Getting Things Done, and your other books. Those people that jump into the GTD system, we'll talk about more about in a minute. So now it's time to take action, and of course, you know, we mentioned there's an average of 150 actions we could do at any given time. We've got our action list in the action folder on email. How do we prioritize and execute on all these actions?
Well, I'm going to make it even more complex. It's not just those actions, because you have those actions. If all you had were those actions, that would be challenging enough. But let's add to that two other kind of behaviors.
Yep.
We call it the threefold nature of work.
Okay.
One thing is work you've already defined to do. That is the stuff that I've already decided, look, here's the action item I need to take. It's on my list. Here's the six people I need to call. And that's work you've already defined. However, a lot of what happens during your day is what I call ad hoc or unplanned.
Mm-hmm.
The phone rings. You pick it up. Somebody's giving you new input. So there's sometimes the whole day is like that. You know, you started to work on your list, the phone rang, there were three emails that showed up, there suddenly an emergency showed up with your kids, and suddenly, you know, you get to the end of the day and you didn't get anything done off your list. But you did get a lot of stuff done. You just did new stuff that came in that you either implicitly or explicitly decided was more important than anything on your list.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yep,
now,
that has definitely happened. I've had lots of days like that.
Now, is that good or bad?
Yeah, well, it depends on what the distractions or ad hoc things were.
Right. It depends. If everything that you did was actually more important than anything on your list, that's just good self-management. Right?
Yeah.
The decision that, hey, wait, here's a piece of work that I hadn't planned on, but it's actually more important than any other piece of work right now. You know, like children will be served.
Uh-huh.
Whatever. You know, like, okay, that's a conscious judgment call. Here's the problem. Very few people have a complete inventory of what they won't be doing.
Mm.
So they then, the interruption call, oh, my God, I'm getting interrupted. There's probably other stuff I should or could or need to be doing that's probably more important than this. Oh, damn. And that's where the interruptions start to create stress, is because people don't maintain the complete inventory to evaluate it against.
Mm.
So the third thing you need to do is, well, okay, how do you keep that inventory clean and clear and current? Well, that's going to take you 30 to 60 minutes a day of dealing with the phone calls, the voicemails, the emails, the stuff coming in that, you know. In other words, how long could you go, Mary, without checking your voicemail or email and trust that what you're doing is what you ought to be doing? I don't know. You know. And so some part of you, if you're not doing that often enough, you know, then that then starts to become seriously overwhelming psychologically, because some part of you says there's a big unknown out there.
Right.
So keeping that backlog is, that, you know, there's a surprise coming toward me that I can't foresee. There's one coming toward you, too. So when that surprise hits, you know, how big a backlog do you want in terms of unprocessed stuff? That's why when I'm not doing anything else, I'm cleaning up to zero. Because it's a lot easier to deal with new stuff when I don't have a big backlog of things and I can trust my inventory is nice and clear. I hope that didn't sound too complex for people, but I can't oversimplify this. Those are the very real things that we deal with, because a lot of people say, well, I don't even bother getting organized because I get so many interruptions. So, well, that is exactly the reason to get organized, so that you can not deal with them as interruptions. They're just new input.
Well, so maybe you could walk us through an example of a kind of an interruption either that you might say no to based on your overall purpose or overall vision, versus something that would be a good distraction or a good interrupter.
Yeah. Well, let's say your teenager walks in and says, gee, you know, can I da-da-da-da-da? And you go, well, wait a minute. You know, in order to answer that question, we're going to probably need to have a conversation. Can I get back to you? You know, tell you what, there are three or four of the things I'd like to talk to you about. You know, can we set a time to make that happen so we can just handle all that much more efficiently? I'll really then be able to give it the attention that deserves.
Okay,
right?
that's good.
That's a good example.
That's a great example.
Our boss or somebody shows up and they say, well, great. Hey, tell you what, you know, I will get to that as soon as I can. Let me make a note about that, throw it in my own in basket, and I will make sure I pick that up again. Another problem, see, with interruptions is most people don't trust their ability to be able to take that input and placehold it sufficiently. So they have to go deal with it right now because I don't trust I can write it in a system and then I'll look at it or that I'll deal with it in some appropriate time. So I have to go do it, but oh gosh, but it's not the most important thing. And then you blame them for disturbing your world. And the truth is you're just reflecting that you're inappropriately managing the input.
Right. So if you've got a way to take that, if we call it a distraction, and put it into your system in another place, and then trust your system, because that's the other, yeah, and then we've got to make sure we trust it so we actually get back and handle
right. What
we've said no to in the moment.
Right. Well, I'm looking at right now pretty empty. I emptied it last night. My in-basket is zero. Actually, and there are two things in it, you know, two receipts I just threw in there. But the thing is, I don't need to deal with those things right now because they're in a place that I know I will drive to zero again within the next 24 hours. So it gives me the freedom to take all kinds of notes about all kinds of things and just throw it in there. And it does not, I haven't even decided what to do about it, but it's off my mind because I have it into the system, into a systematic process that I trust. But you're right, if I didn't trust I was going to empty that in basket, it's still going to bug me.
So of course, people always must ask you, David, you must be really organized and totally productive, and yes?
Well, I guess it's all relative. Yeah. I mean, relatively speaking, I pretty much eat my own dog food.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I have to. I mean, that's how I came up with this. I did this for me.
And how long did it take you to master your system?
You know, 63.6 years.
Oh.
that's a little hyperbolic. I mean, the I'm constantly sort of tweaking it and finding better ways to do this. And the truth is that I didn't wake up one morning and have some grand epiphany about all of this. It was really piece by piece, little by little by little, over many years, actually, that I started gathering all of this. I think, you know, it for most people, by the way, who start to implement this, it's a pretty good 2-year process to really, you know, give yourself permission to just take one foot in front of the other and start working on, you know, sort of the key aspects of this systematic approach. And it's not that you don't get any value for 2 years. No, you get a lot of value immediately. But really making all this so it's on cruise control can just take a period of time. And it took me a period of time to work the different pieces. Actually, I'm saving people a lot of time. It took me a lot longer than it needs to.
Right. Well, it's, you know, and I love, as you say, too, I mean, there's flexibility that we sort of need to expect, that there's going to be things that interrupt us along the way. And when we're really clear of the priorities and we've got good systems in place, that we can navigate this so much more smoothly.
Well, sure. I mean, it doesn't keep you out of troubled waters. I mean, but at least you got your hand on the helm and your ship's not sinking. So, you know, the idea is you need to get in the driver's seat of what you're doing, and you may be threading through, you know, turbulent waters, but at least you're in the driver's seat about it as opposed to just being, you know, thrown around as a victim of latest and loudest. So, as I said, this doesn't solve all of life's problems, but it gives you a reference point and a stable sort of ground to then engage with those issues and turn them into opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, and as you know, it's really all about your altitude and your attitude about the event or the situation that makes the most difference. But it's one thing to say that, well, I should have a positive attitude, but it's quite another to actually do what you need to do to get it under control. Because you can try to have a positive attitude, but if you still haven't made the appropriate decisions or don't have a trusted system to do it, it's still going to wake you up at 3:00 in the morning.
Mm-hmm. So true. Well, in the book, you also say that there's the do it, delegate it, defer it, drop it rule.
Yeah, that's when you're processing your stuff, you pick it up. You say, look, if you can do it in 2 minutes, do it right then. If you can throw it away, throw it away. You know, the delete or the dump thing should go first. So, you know, look, if you don't need this thing, just get it out of your face. But if you are going to do something about it, yeah, do it. If you can do it in 2 minutes, do it right then. If you can't do it in 2 minutes and you can hand it off to somebody else, then hand it off. And if it's none of those, then you need to defer it. That is, I need to park this on a list and placehold this reminder of a piece of work I need to do that I'm not going to do right now. I need to get my inventory all defined before I start making good judgment calls about which one is the best one to do.
That's good, really good. And any other maybe keys to planning a project?
Well, you need to make sure that it all comes down to what's the outcome and what's the action item. So, you know, and then any other planning, usually the way the mind naturally plans is once you say, okay, I'm going to give my mom a great birthday party, and, well, what's going to all going to be involved? Essentially, your mind is going to start brainstorming anyway. So if you give yourself a good opportunity, as you mentioned earlier, to be able to just grab all the details, little, big, whatever, and don't try to organize it all right away. Just kind of dump it all out. What, here's an idea, here's an idea, here's another idea. And then once you're kind of your head is empty about the project, then you might want to come back around and say, okay, well, it looks like we've got three sub-projects here, and that looks like to be the most important one, and here's the first thing, here's the next step, let me call SIS. So, again, the more that you give yourself permission to just get stuff off your mind that's on your mind, get it out in front of you, and then move it toward, okay, what's the action item I need to take, you know, as a trusted judgment here, what is going to serve you.
Mm-hmm. I love that, the whole model, and starting with that overall purpose and the overall outcome visioning, and then get to the brainstorming before we start organizing and taking those next actions.
Yeah, and you can do all, you know, I wouldn't hold back on any of that. Sometimes there is a, as we say, ready, fire, aim. Sometimes you need to just start taking an action and generate more information and then come back and regroup. So, you know, what you don't want to do is avoid things too long. So the next action step is still the master key. And the only reason to do any planning is so that you trust that the next action you've determined is the best one or the right one.
Right. Oh, that's so good. Well, and I know you've got a fabulous system called the GTD system. And by the way, I found on Twitter, there's a lot of people that are hashtagging GTD.
Yep.
There's a lot of getting things done coaches out there in the Twitterverse.
Yep.
But tell us about this system and who's it for and
well,
all the goodies.
To be kind of an inexpensive way to hop in if you're not familiar with GTD and getting things done system and you want to do that. So we created a 6-CD set, and it's just audio, and we literally walk you through the process and give you a lot of insights from me and two of our other senior coaches have done that, as well as give you, you know, my book is included, as well as, you know, a number of sort of the cliff notes, if you will, kind of the templates that'll give you what these models are as good reminders. So it's a great little kit that you can get, and kind of in your own speed and in your own timing, you can just start to go through it. If people go to get GTD now, that's as one word, GTDNOW.
Okay.
You'll actually see a bunch of testimonials around it. You'll see a lot more detail about what the product involves, and it also involves a free month of. We have an online membership program called GTD Connect. You get a free month. There's tons of material in there in terms of audio, visual stuff. And you also get a coupon if you want to go to a live seminar of either me or one of our senior instructors around the U.S. and in London. There's a 25% off discount that you get for that as part of the package as well. So we kind of made a whole little starter package here that's got plenty of depth to it, and people can get going on it.
And then what is the cost for the system?
You know, I think it's $79.
Oh my gosh, that's a total deal.
Yeah.
And I would say too, a huge value to be in a membership group where you can be in conversation with other people that are using the system, because ultimately it's about taking the system and integrating it into your own lives, and you can learn from different people about, you know, it often is these little nuances, these great little tips that end up, oh, that's so much easier than I thought in my head they would be.
Yeah. They actually are. And it's, as I say, it's not rockets. It's not some new foreign thing that takes you long to do. You'll instantly start to feel better and feel more in control.
Wow. Well, I think that is a fabulous value. And in the follow-up notes that I send out, I'll definitely include a link to getgtdnow.com. And sounds like I may need to be purchasing a set for myself I'm going to have to go back and reread your book again so I can just now go through and actually implement every single step that I've sort of neglected along the way.
Actually fun.
Excellent. Well, we're here at the top of the hour. Any final words for our listeners about how they can maximize their productivity and maximize their peace while they're being productive?
Well, you know, one way to think about it is start paying attention to what has your attention. And you need to give appropriate attention to what has your attention. Otherwise, it'll start to take more of your attention than it really ought to. And mm-hmm. so you have your own, you are your own master key in terms of just starting to listen and cycle. Wait a minute, what's on my mind? Why is it on my mind? And the GTD system gives you the, okay, here's how I take what has got my attention and get my attention off of it. And interestingly, what you do when that happens is the stuff starts to move forward almost by itself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the believe it or not, the clearer your head is, the more you're actually getting done.
Mm.
And it's fun. Once you start to catch this, it's really like a game that once you learn the rules of the game, it's really fun to play.
Mm-hmm. That's probably why I'm always more in the flow, you know, those first couple days after I've done a big jump on the list. Wow. Well, let me, I'm going to just open up the line so that our listeners can thank you for all of the wisdom you shared with us over the last hour. This is really valuable. I took lots of notes myself, and I'm just really honored to have you as part of our Conversations in the Master series, and look forward to helping spread the word about your work.
Thanks. Been my pleasure.
And the lines are open, and you can say thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good to hear you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, David.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks. All right. Thank you, David. We'll talk to you next time.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.